Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, it's another edition of the book club, of the Return of the King book club from myself and Evan Dammerl. We talk about chapters 6, 7, and 8, some very juicy David Blatt stuff in these chapters. That's all coming up today on this episode of Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're also brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, it's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
What's going on, buddy? How are you doing as we get towards the end of this week here?
I'm not doing too bad. It's just, you know, hanging out, living life, doing my thing. It's fun. I were reading Return of the King. I've been rewatching Lord of the Rings, and Return of the King is on my watch list next. But the director's cut's like 5.5 hours long, so I really have to commit some time and possibly take a couple breaks during it, just because that's quite a lot of movie to unpack. How about you, man? How are you doing?
Doing good. I'm into the full-on city planning mode in one Animal Crossing. I'm very into the. I get into city planning and like design things, and you know, you learn, live and you learn. You probably play some stuff you wouldn't have done if you would have known that was going to be a thing. But it's getting fun.
I have a question. As an Animal Crossing newcomer, do you have an opinion on time travel? Because it's a very divisive topic amongst the fan base.
I will not be touching time travel one bit.
Oh, you're a purist. Okay. Well, I, for those listening, and I'm sure people I've taught how to time travel, I time traveled in Animal Crossing, and I like finished the quote-unquote main plot of the game in like 3 days. So
I'm here for the slow burn. I'm here for the especially now, like the way they like close the loophole, I believe, on the interest rates in the bank.
Yeah.
You don't get as much benefit from that. Like, you can't just accumulate a mass amount of wealth very quickly.
Yeah, well, yes and no, because you can just start a massive orchard, and like every 2 days, I think, fruit spawns, so you could just sell all the fruit on your island that isn't native to your island, and you can make some mad dosh real quick. I mean, I more or less, my house is paid off. I think I just have to wait for the I have to pay off the basement, and I'm done, and I'm almost done with that. And then I finished my fossil collection already. Crazy Red is starting to do, or not Crazy Red, they changed his name, but his art collection, working on that, and then just fish and bugs, and then kicking out unsightly villagers that I don't want living there anymore. So yeah, it's just pretty much playing God at this point. It's fun, and once you unlock terraforming, Chris, you too will feel like a god, and you'll want to have your village to be as perfect as you want it to be.
Yeah, Infrastructure Week actually happens in my Animal Crossing, unlike in real life.
That's fair.
If people get that joke, then I feel very happy with them as listeners.
I feel that. I mean, yeah, I've been waiting for this moment ever since we started this thing, but
I'm going to cede the floor to you. This is chapter 6. It's called In the Dark. Evan, this is like David Blatt and the issues he had with the Cavs, I think, like foreshadowed and distilled into a chapter.
I mean, it's just not just this chapter. It's like, it's a good portion of my one thing I did notice about this book, and I'm sure those who read along, I'm sure you noticed this too, is Windhorse and McMenamin really spend a lot of time like slow burning the Blatt era, as short-lived as it was, and then just kind of like wrapping up the championship run. Because I mean, I guess if you want to be frank, it was midway into the season when they fired David Blatt, and then Ty Lue takes over and like wins the championship. Like, that's a dramatic thing. But let's see. I think it's just like David Blatt had way too much pride, and that's part of why he didn't work in Cleveland. I mean, LeBron sabotaging him every step of the way didn't work, but Yeah, no, the fact that he downplayed everything, and like, there's plenty of just missed opportunities for him, just like easy layup moments where he could just, you know, not completely say the wrong thing, and he absolutely did. And it just blows my mind that he would just do all these things, and the fact that he didn't see what was wrong with what he was saying at times. And maybe it's like a cultural thing. I mean, granted, David Platt did grow up in the United States, but he spent the majority of his life, and especially his adult years, in Israel and overseas, like coaching European teams, where he has a little bit more of an authoritarian attitude. Weird enough that it draws parallels to the John Beilein era, but no, just everything David Blatt said that was wrong, he did say wrong, and there was never a dull moment with him as head coach as the Cavs, in all the worst ways possible.
No question, and I think when you look at the compare it to Beilein, I think when you look at this book, Beilein at least made some efforts to at least acknowledge that it was going to be a learning process. Like, they kind of went out of their way to sell that, and obviously I don't think that manifested itself in the way that they thought it might or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Blatt is just like drawing the line to miss in here. I mean, just with the offense, with he's like annoyed at LeBron kind of coming in and like having a meeting. It's like the power dynamic there from day one is just sort of going to rankle.
Yeah,
David Blatt right away, which I empathize with. There's certain part of this I empathize with, but he came in, I think, just like, in a way, I almost wonder if he could redo it, and he could get a chance to redo his foray into the NBA again. I wonder if he would want to go do that the season or two as an assistant in Golden State or wherever, just because it would have probably opened up his eyes to how some of this works, and if it was for him, or if he could have had more time to adapt instead of being thrust into this. And the other, obviously, unknown here is, like, he doesn't expect to coach LeBron, and LeBron is going to change everything. So I think there's some of that, but also just, like, there's nothing about this that reads as, like, David Blatt sort of knew what he was getting into when he came over.
No, I don't. I mean, obviously, I think the organization's plan during that free agency era was to try and lure LeBron back, but it didn't feel like a certain thing. And during the coaching search section of this book, they talked about a lot, like when Griff just flat out gave a pitch to Bill Self to become the head coach of the Cavs, who, as everyone knows, is the head coach at Kansas. And he, more or less, it's just like the Cavs kept getting left at the altar with all these prolific collegiate coaches by saying, like, well, no LeBron, no guarantee that I actually want to coach there. And then ditto for trading Kevin Love here. And then I think Blatt was legitimately sold on the fact that he wouldn't be coaching for a championship immediately. He did have a reputation as for a player development coach, and his offensive system definitely seemed like it'd be something that plays to the strength of Kyrie and Dion. And I think Blatt legitimately believed he was coming into this at first coaching a team that consisted of Kyrie, Dion, Wiggins, Bennett, Thompson, Zeller, Harris. I don't even know if Karasev was still on the roster or not at this point. He might have been gone, like, he was there, and then just any of the other auxiliary and complimentary young pieces the Cavs got, they ended up trading to shed salary space to get LeBron. So, yeah, no, that was definitely weird, but I do have a question for you. Do you remember watching the Cavs in the preseason when they were running Blatt's offensive system, and did you, like, think, like, oh, wow, this is, like, it was beautiful to watch when the Cavs were actually executing it properly, and it all fell apart super fast, but did you think it was ever going to work when you first saw it? You're like, okay, yeah, no, LeBron's bought in, Kevin's bought in, Kyrie's bought in. Like, this is a legitimate offensive system, and the Cavs are just going to be a very fun and smart passing and just cutting team.
Yeah, I remember seeing the stuff coming out of Brazil and just being sure that it might work, and, like, everyone hyping it up and everything like that. But I think for me at the time, if I'm going to say what has changed between now and then, I think I was very naive about how these things work. I did not understand, I don't think at the time, like, the gravitas of a player like LeBron can come in and just have, even though I have to understand what getting LeBron back means for a franchise like the Cavs.
Mm-hmm.
I also just look at it and think, okay, I probably underestimated how much sway he's going to come in and have. And I think the stuff where, I mean, the stuff in this chapter as well with the Irving and Deion Waiters dynamics in terms of James being very concerned about the ball hogging and the the passing, and just how he's not consulting Blatt on that. Honestly, I think LeBron wants more passing, and obviously you didn't get all the way to, like, the quote unquote Princeton offense or whatever they were gonna run. But to answer your question, I do think I was probably a little bit naive about what this was really gonna be until, you know, I kind of get a better understanding of what LeBron is and what he means to a situation like this. I think if you're looking at this, it's just David Blatt was probably never going to get what he wanted exactly the moment LeBron comes back. Because you got to remember the other thing in this chapter is LeBron was interested in the ring, but he didn't come back to play with Kyrie. That changed over time. Like, I think he came to really appreciate Kyrie to a large degree and how good they could be together. But that wasn't the case at this point in time.
No, it absolutely wasn't at this point in time or this juncture. But, like, at the same time, it's just like kind of like you said, like I empathize with Blatt and like I feel bad for him and everything, and the fact that he definitely just didn't see this coming, and the fact that like LeBron wasn't into him being the coach at all, and like behind the scenes we definitely knew that, like after the fact, like that LeBron wasn't in on Blatt being the coach, and like publicly at the time he tried to iron things over and try and smooth things over as much as possible. But yeah, no, LeBron undermining Blatt from the get-go and just showing him absolute disrespect in a locker room that had a mix of new faces and that are veterans, and then you had a lot of young and impressionable players, especially Kyrie and Dion, who Blatt's trying to command the respect of in the locker room and try and keep their attention with. Yeah, no, just that whole dynamic right there, like that's just that Blatt was set up to fail as soon as LeBron agreed to come back as to the Cavs, and I just feel like it was inevitable that he was let go. And I jumping ahead a little bit here, I do remember when he was fired, I was like really frustrated at the time, just because the Cavs were the best team in the East and they had a solid record and they were looking really good and looking really formidable at full health, and like Kyrie was coming back. Like I remember I was super frustrated, but you know, with the power of hindsight and the fact the way things ended up the way they did in 2016, like without a question, David Blatt wasn't the guy for the job. And maybe in a different timeline, LeBron doesn't come back to Cleveland and David Blatt ends up being a somewhat, maybe even very successful head coach like he has everywhere else in his career and let everyone know about. And maybe that's just a different timeline we're in altogether.
Let's end on this quote. So it's after a loss to the Raptors, they fall to 5-7. Blatt, you know, James doesn't play the last 6 minutes of this game, they lose. He gives this quote. This is, you know, the witness to Rillers and Waiters, my need to be moved on from. Quote, this is from LeBron. Quote, we're a very fragile team right now. Any little adversity hits us, we shell up. But I'm very optimistic. I'm very positive, more positive than I thought I'd be right now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what Windhorst writes. James was positive because as he sat there on the bench, he'd gotten closer to making a decision. He was about to make a change. He was about to execute a bloodless coup. His star teammate Irving did know it, neither did his coach. Nah, I can do it on my own, James said later. I'm past those days where I have to ask. This is 12 games into the regular season. That's wild.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think, like you said, maybe some of us, myself included, because I was a little bit more casual this time, still with the Cavs, but I really wasn't as prepared for LeBron to have like so much toe and pull within the organization that he kind of got away with whatever the hell he wanted. And that's just kind of, you know, you take the good with the bad with LeBron, you have to like see these kind of things. But yeah, no, LeBron taking over primary ball handling duties and pretty much playing the offense and dictating it the way he wanted, like 12 games into the season, that's something. Like, I mean, shit, John Beilein lasted longer before he realized he wasn't loving the situation in Cleveland. It took LeBron 12 games to realize he wasn't loving it, and I have a feeling David Blatt soon after realized he wasn't loving it either. But, you know, you stay together for the kids at that point because you don't want to mess up a good thing. But, yeah, no, that's just definitely a little crazy to think it was that early into the year.
We're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk more about Locked On Cavs. And again, today's podcast is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever.
The best.
Hey, Chris here. Just want to remind you that Built Bars are tasty. This is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar in 16 amazing flavors. 8 chocolate and nut flavors, 8 chocolate / nut free flavors. These are bars covered in 100% real chocolate, soft and easy to chew. They're healthy. These are great for the health conscious guy out there. If you want to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a little treat, this is the bar for you. These are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber bars. For example, the peanut butter brownie bar has 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. The mint brownie, 15 grams of protein, 110 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbohydrates. For me, and I know Evan feels the same way, we've grown up eating these crappy protein bars that taste bad, but we suck them down and eat them because we need the protein. We're trying to hit those macro goals, and this allows you to at least enjoy what you're eating. I can't tell you enough for me and how much better it is to eat a protein bar like this. Evan, what about you?
No, they're absolutely great. For those of you listening at home who may not know this, I'm type 1 diabetic, so the fact that these are low sugar...
I didn't?
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Wow, learning things in this app.
Yeah, we are, but since they're low carb, low sugar, high protein, like, that's right up my alley, and the fact that they're still sweet without tasting like a fake processed kind of sweet, and as someone with T1D, like, you know when it's fake processed sweet. Yeah, it keeps my blood sugars regular, it keeps me feeling full, it's a good supplement, and it's like you said, it's if you want to maintain weight or lose weight, it's a good way to go about things. It's also just a good treat to help you reward yourself, and while, especially during quarantine when there's so many temptations to like pig out, eat the worst possible things for yourself.
Yeah. Dude, get a little Built Bar in your life. I would recommend the peanut butter brownie flavor is very good, and I would recommend the banana nut flavor. Those are two of my favorite flavors. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON, $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. Check out all those great flavors, and again, I highly recommend peanut butter brownie and banana nut. Check those out right now. All right, we're back. Thanks again to Built Bar for sponsoring the whole Lockdown Network for the month of May. Just an incredible move on their part, and we're glad to be partnering with them. But Evan, let's get into chapter 7. What other coach do we have? Again, this is just crazy David Blatt stuff. What is your takeaway as we get into this chapter?
This is such a good, again, time is a flat circle with the Cavs, where like they cannot get out of their own ways, and like the coaching situation is always so dysfunctional. And that's like my biggest takeaway, is just from like the next few chapters, like, yeah, things are kind of going great, and then something's wrong with LeBron and Blatt, or something's wrong with Blatt and insert said player here. Like, there's just an issue every time. And yeah, whatever coach we have is just like quite a soundbite. What was your takeaway from this chapter?
So I look at this and I think the stuff at the beginning where Blatt is losing track of timeouts and like who's on the floor and
that's
stuff,
embarrassing.
No matter, I think, who the coach is, like, that's the kind of stuff that I think from talking to players and just kind of in your, if you think about this in terms of your own workspace, when that kind of stuff happens in your own personal workspace, that is going to erode trust in the structure for you, right? Like, I think for me, if that happens in my job, that's going to erode my trust in people. And over time,
yeah,
that's going to matter. And when you're ultra competitive like LeBron James, I don't think you at all are going to view that as something that is something you can tolerate for any extended amount of time. That is just something that is going to be a no-go for you.
Yeah.
It's very telling that we're not even 100 pages into this book and you get this line that I underlined the first time I read this and was like, oh, I'm glad I did this when I was doing the reread. But sometimes it took assistant Ty Lue to step up and tell James to shut up. It was a foul and to go run the next play when things would go down in practice, which is just like pretty, pretty standard.
Mm-hmm.
You get the LeBron saying, I'm low tolerance for things of this nature as he evaluates the Cavs record. Quote, sometimes it's something I'm working on as well, which I knew from the beginning that this is going to be my biggest test to see how much patient I've got. And that just kind of goes in there. You do get the little winning streak that allows the Cavs, and as it says, to kind of focus elsewhere. You know, you have, this is where Irving and James wore the I Can't Breathe t-shirts when they're playing in Brooklyn, which is, I think, one of the, a great, great moment of that season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that will matter most. This is just like a very bizarre...
Yeah, bizarre is a good way to put
chapter,
it.
Chapter, with everything going on. I mean, you start having the Deion stuff, and you have the Anders. I totally had forgotten. I knew Andy had gotten hurt, but I had forgot that it was an Achilles tear. And there's so much stuff earlier in this campaign, like not that far in, where it really piles up. And that's not. I mean, I want to say to be empathetic to Blatt, I at least can understand like how that can be very hard for him.
Yeah, no, it really is, and I mean, I know I was drawing parallels in the last segment to Blatt and John Boeheim, but at least David Blatt was able to adapt to the fact that he loses a player to an injury. Like, Boeheim wasn't able to adapt to the fact that Jordan Clarkson was able to be traded, but which is just absolutely wild, by the way. But, yeah, no, it's just, I think, again, Blatt was set up to fail the moment LeBron announced he was coming back to Cleveland, because he never had LeBron's respect, and the way his actions and just like the way that he kind of, like, he was king of, like, the Blatt, it was a war of attrition between, not attrition, but it was a power struggle between Blatt and LeBron to say who was the voice of the team, and LeBron won, and Blatt was afraid of LeBron. Like, he never wanted to upset him. I remember that was a big point of contention amongst the team, is Blatt was super quick to call out, like, Kyrie and Dion and Kevin and other key figures, but like whenever LeBron did something wrong, like you said, it was Ty who was the one who would call him out. And again, like, we talk about Ty Lue a lot, we speak highly of Ty Lue a lot on this podcast, but the fact that Ty Lue is one of a few coaches, maybe other than, I'd say Spoelstra is the best coach that LeBron played for, but Ty Lue is definitely up there, just because of the fact that Ty Lue was able to know how to make LeBron tick and how to press the proper buttons. And like, once Blatt conceded defeat and just like lived in fear of the best player on the team, it just definitely, you know, trickled down to the rest of the thing. Like you said, like, the Varejao thing was super unfortunate, and just, like, you started to learn really quick, like, the Cavs had a lot of this perceived depth of, like, Mike Miller and Sean Marion and, like, Thompson and Varejao and everybody else. Like, it just kind of was like a perfect storm for everything to go wrong for Blatt and the Cavs, and just added even more pressure to an already high-pressure, high-stakes situation.
Then you get this stuff with, you know, I mean, as you noted, it's kind of they talk about firing Blatt, and then you have to come out and defend him, and maybe it was already time at that point. You know, I can't imagine it would have been a well-received move if you fire Blatt that early, but I think you could have, like, if Ty comes in and succeeds, like, that's kind of worth noting.
Yeah.
And we, as we wrap up this chapter here, you get the Deion Waiters trade in this chapter. You get Deion.
It is cold what they did to Deion.
Getting traded, his first start in 2 months.
And, back yeah.
Back in Philadelphia. Saying he'd already been a guy that wasn't fitting in. I think they talked about how, you know, he'd told teammates, like, the way he was having to play was not the way he played basketball, which, you know, to refer back to our conversation with Michael Pina, like, know your role. And knowing your role is something every vet I've ever talked to is like, that's the biggest thing for you to succeed in the NBA, is knowing your role in it. Deion has, I think, struggled with that, and I think this is an example of that. And then he gets traded, though, in a way I really empathize with, in his hometown. He's going to starve for the first time in 2 months, and then it's just kind of done from there. And then, you know, obviously JR and Mozgov and all these guys come in and Shump, but that's a really... I would understand why Deion Waiters is not on good terms with the Cavs.
Yeah, no. I totally understand why Deion isn't on good terms with the Cavs. And, like, it's just kind of been, like, an indicative thing of his entire career of just what has gone wrong for him at this point. Just him landing in Miami was a good thing. I guess playing in Oklahoma City kind of worked for what they were trying to do. But, like, him in Miami helped him get his act together for a little bit. But then, like, the whole edibles thing happened, and then he was let go. Well, he was traded to Memphis, and Memphis let him go, and he was supposed to end up back with the Lakers and LeBron, which is kind of, you know...
He signed
on the Lakers. He hasn't played for them, but, like... Kind of funny to think, because I remember reading throughout this book that LeBron actively tried to take Deion under his wing and, like, mentor him and guide him. And, like you said, Deion wasn't receptive to it. He wanted to play his way, and it was his way or the highway. And, like you said, know your personnel. And clearly Deion just wasn't part of that. And I think just his overall attitude and the fact that the book never touched on this, but do you remember when Deion, like, more or less told the organization, like, it's either me or him, between him and Kyrie? Like,
yeah, amazing stuff. Amazing.
Yeah, plans. That decision doesn't really feel that. It didn't feel that hard then, and it definitely doesn't feel hard now with the power of hindsight. But yeah, just, like, real power move on Deion's part to try and pull that off.
Yeah, I also just want to say thank you to the New York Knicks for basically giving in on trading Shump and attaching JR as like the way to get Shump, or like attaching JR's money. And Griff, you know, I mean, LeBron gives, I think we know this in the book, Griff did not want to get JR. LeBron was like, that's fine, do it, I'll take care of it. And obviously it worked. And JR ended up being a much more useful player to the Cavs than Shump did. Funny how that
No, it really is. And I remember at the time when JR was traded to the Cavs, I was like, incense, because I'm like, listen, they just got rid of a problem child in Dion Waiters, and first off, it felt like a huge weight was taken off my shoulders after the Cavs traded Dion, because I defended that Dion pick for the longest time, and I defended Dion as a player just because he played for the Cavs, and as soon as he was gone, I'm like, alright, I have nothing left, like, I don't care, like, he sucks, like, he's just not, he's not as good as he thinks he is. But then, like, I just remember I was pretty upset, because the Cavs already had a fragile enough locker room that you had a volatile player like JR, I'm like, this is just going to be an absolute recipe for disaster, and like you said, he ended up being more valuable than Shumpert, and I'm definitely glad that I was proven wrong in this regard.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is just another example of how crazy this chapter was. This is, like, really, like, a transitional chapter, I feel, but it's a reminder of how insane this was at the very beginning, and we don't talk about how crazy it was at the beginning, I think, probably enough.
No, not at all. It's just, like, a weird, weird time overall, and, like, yeah, I didn't even touch on this. Like, they were already flirting the idea of firing Blatt, too. Like, this is just...
Yeah.
Jeez. This was...
I would understand that...
Yeah, no, it was. I mean...
There's a coup happening. Like, it's...
Yeah, no, exactly. And just, like, at the same time, it's also amazing to think, because the Cavs pulled pretty much a very similar stunt to this. I guess in the sense where they fired... Not when they fired Ty, but when they completely overturned the roster in LeBron's last year and, like... Kevin Love shared with Jason Lloyd, like, he knew that was when it was, this was when it was over, but, like, that amount of, like, instability for the Cavs to have is just absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah. Alright, we're gonna take one more break, and then we'll come back and talk about some more mind-blowing stuff with Kevin Love, coming up next on Locked On Cavs. We're back here. Evan, let's talk about Finn in chapter 8. I just want to start with...
LeBron's cryptic bullshit.
Well, I want to start with David Blatt, because he says Kevin Love is not a max
player. Oh my god. This was the...
This is... Okay, so LeBron has all these back injuries. They're struggling a little bit. You know, Love and Irving aren't playing that well. And then David Blatt, verbatim, says Kevin's not a max player yet, is he? Now, here's what they say. Quote, these sort of exchanges had become typical with Blatt, who often challenged reporters' questions. But this was not the best answer, because indeed Love was earning a max salary for that season. Whatever Blatt meant to say, it came off sounding like the coach disputing Love's salary and standing as one of the league's best players. Now, Love had struggled at this point. I think this is the beginning of the hysteria that was always unfair about Kevin Love. But then he tries to walk it back by saying this when he like half retracts it after they had a meeting in Phoenix before they had practiced. He said, quote, I was simply saying that with our team, he does not have a max contract because we aren't allowed to talk to him about anything until after the season is over, Blatt said. I just wasn't clear on what I meant, but I hope now he understands exactly what I meant. Kevin Love for me is the player of the highest order, but he was again playing on a max contract.
Yeah.
Kevin takes the high road a little bit here, but like... David Blatt, just like...
Foot and mouth syndrome,
just,
man.
It's just like NBA player PR
work. It's just... Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, oh, I completely forgot about this when we were... I was like, I'm like, oh my god, he did say that. And... It's just like, I'm reading it out. Like, Chris Haynes said that David Blatt elaborated saying that he's not a max player on their roster because they aren't allowed to talk about future contracts, but he was a max player, and it's just like, it's such a bad look, it's such an easy thing just like to not say the wrong thing, and like, if you know you're wrong, like, oh yeah, no, I was wrong, like, my bad, like, you know, Kevin's a max player, we're very happy to have him. No, but more or less, Blatt just doubled down and looked like an even bigger idiot. But like you said, Kevin took the high road here, and just kind of like, besides last year, as in like the season that came to a screeching halt because of coronavirus, Kevin played the company guy all the time, and like, he got constantly dumped on by teammates, the media, teammates behind the scenes, the media, and even his own coach and David Blatt. Like, Guy could never catch a break, and this is just like the first one of the, not one of the first signs of it, but like one of the bigger things, and just like one of the weirder dynamics that came with like David Blatt being the Cavs head coach. And you know, at the time, it's even crazier to think like the Cavs were 19-19 in the sixth place in the Eastern Conference. Like, they already had enough stuff flying at them. Just to have something stupid like this happen as well is just even crazier to think.
Yeah, a couple other small things before we get to the LeBron stuff here. I forgot that Mike Miller just had played great the year before, comes in really bad shape, and just is not helpful to the Cavs. I forgot that JR, in a foreshadow of things to come, hits 8 threes in his first game with LeBron once LeBron is healthy and able to go after the trade. I forgot about the whole thing with Kobe when they played the Lakers at Staples Center. Here's the graph. I'll read it real quick. Quote, late in the game, there was a pivotal moment in the timeout huddle. After sitting much of the second half, Kobe Bryant had scored 7 quick points, and the Lakers had cut the lead from 9-4. Blatt wanted James to switch over to defend Bryant, who had been scoring on Sean Marion. James declined. Blatt was silent. And here's the kicker. Assistant Ty Lue stepped in and barked at James, "Bron, you take him. Shut that water off." James reversed course and agreed. The Cavs closed out the game without more damage from Bryant. And this is like a recurring thing. Again, we talked about this last chapter. Ty Lue was the right guy.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, one, I don't think Dan Gilbert really likes to fall in love with the out-of-the-box, like, sexy hire, and, like, if it works out, everyone's going to think Dan Gilbert's a genius, because for those who are reading, and, like, with, you know, all this time behind us, we know that Blatt was Dan's choice, and Ty was David Griffin's choice, and, yeah, no, Ty should have always been the coach for the Cavs, and I just wonder how different things would be, because, Ty was brought in to be the defensive coordinator in a sense while Blatt ran the offense, but then, you know, Blatt kind of became useless in running the offense because LeBron sees the offense, but then Ty, when he took over as head coach, improved the Cavs offense by having them play with pace and priority instead of, you know, what Blatt was trying to do. I mean, it worked against the Warriors when the Cavs were ravaged by injuries, but it is such a bad thing that maybe one that, like, the Cavs tried their best to keep this under wraps, so, like, it was a pretty well-known secret at this point that LeBron didn't respect David, but more so the fact that Ty was just always the guy for the job, and again, it's like a what-if scenario, like, what if J.B. Bickerstaff was coaching the Cavs this entire season instead of John Boeheim, or like you said, like, why if they just didn't fire Ty Lue and let him ride it out and develop this current Cavs team. Like, no, Ty's just a really good coach and learned a lot from playing a lot of big personalities like Kobe Bryant, playing under Phil Jackson, and then coaching alongside Doc Rivers. Like, and he was a seasoned veteran. Like, that's like the checklist for a very respected head coach in the NBA, and Ty was the guy for the job. It's super duper duper frustrating.
Yes. Let's wrap up here today, Evan, on Fit In, Fit Out. What do you think is the legacy of that tweet?
If you ask Kevin about it now, I'm sure he'd have, like, a good laugh and say, like, I don't know, like, play it off like it's no big deal. I just remember at the time, I'm like, I didn't really know what to think until LeBron started being even more cryptic with stuff on social media. Like, they talk about this later, but LeBron, and like we talked about this in the last episode, like LeBron and Kevin really didn't have the best relationship in Kevin's first year in Cleveland, and like it didn't really work until Kevin and LeBron sat down and talked and Kevin signed that extension with the Cavs. But there was just so many social media things, and I think this is just like the nature and part of the beast of having LeBron James on your roster is like he'll say some cryptic stuff on social media, and since he's like the most prolific athlete in the world, it runs like wildfire, and since Kevin loves continually the fall guy, and like Chris Bosh kind of tried to warn him about, I just think Fit In, Fit Out, like this legacy, like it was just my first taste really of LeBron and his cryptic bullshit and like his weird leadership style. Like, it works, I guess, but definitely makes me scratch my head and just like it can't be for, like, if I played with LeBron and he pulled that stunt with me, like, I'd be so annoyed so fast.
Yes. All you said is right. Here's my take. LeBron was right.
Oh no, he was.
100% right. Like, LeBron, drama king.
Yeah.
Join with the team, play with, know your role, and just make some sacrifices.
Yeah.
That you're gonna win more games that way.
Yeah.
In life, I think when you do that stuff, you look out for more than just what is making you the happiest at that moment. Sometimes when you're in a structure like that, it matters. Maybe Twitter is not the way
to do it. Yeah, airing it in the court of public opinion is probably never a good idea. Maybe you handle that stuff behind the scenes, but hey, this is just always kind of in LeBron's thing. Like, he is super calculated, and here's a good way to compare it. He's like the Taylor Swift of basketball. Taylor Swift's super calculated and prepared, and like everything is just like perfectly laid out, and seems like it always seems to work out in the end. I don't know. It's just, yeah, there's better ways to go about it, but like, you know, LeBron was 100% right. Like, Kevin wasn't fitting in. He was fitting out, and like, just was not being a part of the whole team dynamic and what they were trying to build and establish, and just part of the growing pains, I guess, and especially learning on the fly, because Kevin and LeBron, this is the first time they ever played, or not Kevin and LeBron, Kevin and Kyrie, this is the first time they actually played like meaningful winning basketball, and you kind of just have to shut up and listen to the guy who really knows what he's doing. And that's, yeah.
Like, if I was going to make a meme for this, you know the Drake meme where it's like he's pushing away the one thing, but then he's like good with the other thing from the Hotline Bling video?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
If it was like, he'd be keeping like the tweets where like he's talking crap about Trump.
You bum. Yeah.
Like, what do you call him? Bum? And then the bad is when he's like subtweeting Kevin Love, even though like they play together and see each other on like a daily basis.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Like, at the same time, when you think about it, you're Kevin Love. Like, you really can't say anything to LeBron without like looking like the bad guy here, because like, I feel like you know you're in the wrong too, and like, it's just, I don't know, like, you get your ass chapped and then everybody just knows. Like, I don't know, it's just like, it was a weird thing, and like a little bit of a glimpse of how LeBron can be really cryptic with stuff, and like how he kind of weaponizes social media and like his quotes in the media in general to get his points across. But
he's old school in that way, because I don't think we see that as much from some of the younger guys. That's really like a LeBron thing in terms of getting out messages via beat writers and stuff, in a way that, you know, isn't always, I think that doesn't happen as much. So you get more leaks that way.
Well, once the Cavs are playoff ready, I'm sure Colin Sexton to do the same thing. Colin Sexton's old school. And I feel like LeBron, Trevor Magnotti said it best. Like, I love Colin Sexton as a player and his work ethic, but still don't know if he works with the Cavs. But yeah, maybe he'll pull some stunts like that. Colin will dust off the old social media that he never uses, and then like start putting people.
Except when he has to do calm.
Yeah.
And calm reads in his
Instagram. Yeah, and they're like, holy, yeah, no. It's just, what a goofy guy. What a fun team. What a weird team. And gotta love LeBron. I mean, you put up with the BS because the results are worth it. I guess that's just what I'm trying to get at. Like, it's just so hard to wrap my head around, like, how many, like, weird narratives and storylines there were, like, the first year he was back in town.
Yeah, and I think it's a reminder, too, that the Cavs have had no culture without him. And he was really breaking that here. Like, he's laying the foundation for that to happen. For him, at least. And I don't think it exists now in the way that they sort of publicly present it as being. But LeBron is someone who's trying to lay that for that team, and I think that's what the work you're seeing. He's like building the foundation of a house that, you know, ultimately has been demolished kind of since
he got,
but it existed for a little bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Evan, we'll get out of here on this. We're getting into some deeper stuff in the book next couple weeks. What is just something you're looking forward to going through again as we kind of wrap up here?
Well, it was fun, David, and we should just really have like just a full-blown episode where like I get into the nitty-gritty of weird stuff David Blatt did, because there's like way too much to talk about, and like and including everything else we have to cover in this episode for us to really break it down. Like, yeah, no, it gets really weird, and then like I do miss it sometimes, though. I do miss the weirdness that came with the second LeBron era Cavs, and how like it still resulted in winning basketball in the end. Like, even when things were just like, felt like peak bullshit, like they're making the news for all the wrong reasons, and then they're just running roughshod on Toronto in the playoffs, and then you're like, yeah, you know what, just putting up that crap in the regular season was really worth it. And I think we're going to get a better glimpse of that going forward as well.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think, too, it'll be fun if maybe we do like what David Blatt was as a coach, kind of go back and look back at that and think about that before he comes to Cleveland. But we'll see if we'll do that in the future. That's going to be it for today's show. Again, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for reading along with us. Check out our episodes with Michael Pina and Trevor Magnotti from earlier this week if you haven't already. Mm-hmm. We're going to have more upcoming next week. Hopefully getting this interview we've been trying to book for a while for next week. That'll, if you see Evan and I just like gleefully tweeting random gifts that you can't figure out why, this is because we've landed something that we're very excited about. But I think if we get that, that'll probably be our favorite episode of the quarantine. Would you agree, Evan?
Yeah, I'd say so. In terms of, you know what? No, I'm not going to say it's my favorite because this is a fine line I'm going to walk. And I, unlike you, who said that Pina was your favorite person to record and talk hoops with and your favorite writer,
I meant
guest. Yeah, okay.
I was not trying to, like, fit in.
Yeah, that's what it felt like today. And so maybe I need to, like, play some Marvin's Room by Drake and just sit in my couch and just kind of have a quiet cry sesh. But, yeah, no, I'm
let's just say
it'll be a big guest, but in the end, everyone's a big and important guest on Locked On Cavs, the number one Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Chase Down. I know you guys are going live at 7 o'clock on a Thursday, but bring it. Thank you.
Yeah. Again, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks again to Built Bar for sponsoring the podcast. When you finish this podcast, please go check out the various other Locked On podcast shows, including Locked On Browns and Locked On Indians. If you're a diehard Cleveland fan, check out Evan's work at Forbes, and soon officially we'll be at with more in a bigger role if you're the Sword. More on that coming in the coming weeks. Check out the Ineligible Man Downfield newsletter. And when you're done with this episode, tell your smart device to play Locked On or Chad Ford's NBA Big Board and go check that out as well. But for myself, for Evan, this has been Locked On Cavs for Friday, May 8th. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.